It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife. However little known the feelings or views of such a man may be on his first entering a neighborhood, this truth is so well fixed in the minds of the surrounding families that he is considered as the rightful property of some one or other of their daughters.
"My dear Mr. Bennet,"
said his lady to him one day,
"have you heard that Netherfield Park is let at last?"
Mr. Bennet replied that he had not.
"But it is,"
returned she,
"for Mrs. Long has just been here, and she told me all about it."
Mr. Bennet made no answer.
"Oh, do not you want to know who has taken it?"
cried his wife impatiently.
"Well, you want to tell me, and I have no objection to hearing it."
This was invitation enough.
"Why, my dear, you must know. Mrs. Long says that Netherfield is taken by a young man of large fortune from the north of England, that he came down on Monday in a chaise and four to see the place, and was so much delighted with it that he agreed with Mr. Morris immediately that he is to take possession before Michaelmas, and some of his servants are to be in the house by the end of next week."
"What is his name?"
"Bingley."
"Is he married or single?"
"Oh, single, my dear, to be sure. A single man of large fortune. 4 or 5 thousand a year. What a fine thing for our girls."
He glides the car into drive and pulls into the colorful streets of Tokyo. The time on the dashboard shows 12 o'clock, just as he arrives at the old apartment building. She steps out as he pulls up. Tonight she wears a fuchsia dress riding high on her thighs, stiletto heels, and a silk wrap of emerald green thrown over her shoulder against the chilly breeze. She carries a small umbrella. He presses a button, and the left rear passenger door opens automatically. She slips in and unwraps her shawl in the cozy interior.
"Konbanwa, Sasaki-san."
"Ah, konbanwa, Yuki-chan."
"Good evening," they greet each other, despite the late hour. He puts the car in gear, and they start their weekly trip across town. Friday night is his favorite fare. He peeks in his mirror and watches this young girl. So much like his daughter, except for the startling slash of blood-red lipstick. "I gave up and replaced the earpiece. It rang back on the instant."
"He was calling from Ashton Steeple,"
Flossie informed me.
"He must have caught the 12:10 all the way from York. It's the only train arriving at this hour. And he was lucky to get through with this weather we're having."
"It's only snow," I replied curtly, then banged the receiver down. I took a deep breath and picked it up again. "And thank you, Flossie," I said, then put it back before she gave me a proper telling off.
"Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease hath all too short a date. Sometime too hot the eye of heaven shines, and often is his gold complexion dimmed, and every fair from fair sometime declines, by chance or nature's changing course untrimmed. But thy eternal summer shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fair thou owest, nor shall death brag thou wanderest in his shade, when in eternal lines to time thou growest. So long as men can breathe or eyes can see, so long lives this, and this gives life to thee."